After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, thank you, Dave Slade, and thank you to our followers tuning in here on Baseball America's Podcast. Our podcast and Facebook Live broadcasts are all sponsored by Baseballism, the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Shop now at baseballism.com. Enter the offer code BASHIP. And receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com for hats, shirts, and more today. We're going to talk a little playoff baseball here at Baseball America today. John Manuel, Kyle Glazer, J.J. Cooper. Guys, it was a late night for all of us. J.J. traipsing through the rain and thankfully coming back from the rain to write up the Justin Verlander trade.
I was literally in bed and Kyle called me and it's like, I saw that he called. I'm like, that Verlander trade happened, didn't it?
We all basically, that's Verlander's music.
So behind the music, how the sausage gets made here at BA, right? We're, you know, staying up watching it. The midnight deadline comes. It looks like the Verlander deal's fallen through. JJ signs off, says he's going to bed. I close my laptop, and just as I'm about to turn off, you know, MLB Network, it all comes up. Wait, hold on. This might actually be happening. We spring back into action. I hesitate. Do I call JJ Cooper at 12:15 in the morning? Yes, for Justin Verlander. Yes, thus it went.
It was that was an exciting waiver trade.
That was as exciting.
I don't remember.
That felt like a non-waiver trade deadline.
That's exactly what it felt, except that it was at midnight, not at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I really prefer the 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock Eastern deadline.
That's why the West Coast, the best coast. It's 9 p.m. there. No one's in bed
but
yet.
But you're here.
Still in the action. I still op. Hey, when it's Pac-12 football season and my Sun Devils are playing, I'm operating like a West Coaster. They had their season opener last night. I was up.
I'm really glad that they cooperated last night to have you write some of that, because I was working on Prospect Hot Sheet. But it was an exciting day, and we're going to start off. I mean, I do want to start with the Tigers. We'll get to the Angels. We're keeping Kyle at bay. We'll talk Angels later. But I do want to talk about the Tigers specifically because, guys, this has never been an organization in the last decade that has been synonymous with rebuild. Basically, ever since they got Justin Verlander, they have not been rebuilding. He got to the major leagues by the end of 2005 for two starts. A big part of their rotation in 2006 as they won the American League pennant. He helped pitch them to two World Series. They didn't win either one of them, and they did win two pennants in his time there. And really, from 2006 on, you could make the case he's been the best pitcher in the American League. I know there were periods where, okay, right now it's Chris Sale, or for some time there was Roy Halladay or Felix Hernandez. But he's been in the conversation most of the time for the last 12
years. How many Tigers players all time would you say are better, like more significant Tigers?
I mean, you've got Ty Cobb, you've got Hank Greenberg.
I'd say he's top five.
Let's focus in the integration era, though. Like in the integration era, because that's just a different era. But like in integration and expansion.
Trammell and Whitaker are obviously very, very big franchise names. But Verlander, I think, is better than both. I really do. Verlander's a slam dunk.
That's very close.
No question Hall of Famer. Clearly, with some of Whitaker and Trammell,
I will say, when you say that, the key part is he bounced back. He had that bad year. He bounced back. This is really actually going to help him for that, because now he gets more postseason resume, which postseason resume does matter when it comes to Hall of Fame.
Oh, it has a big chance. I think he has a chance to really augment his Hall of Fame resume as an Astro.
It's interesting. He is a guy that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, that all-encompassing time period. From 2006 to 2017, again, that 11-year span, there probably hasn't been a better pitcher, not only in the American League, but since Kershaw really came up and started doing his thing around 2009-10. If you want to go a full decade, it's probably Justin Verlander, simply because, especially look at now, last year he should have won the AL Cy Young Award at age 33. This year he got off to the poor start. Look at his last 11 starts. 5-1, 2.31 ERA,
yeah.
190 opponent average. He's back pitching at that ace level at age 34.
Yeah, four finishes in the top three in the Cy Young balloting, one win, a lot of black ink. And the thing is, to me, with the Astros and not a floundering, rebuilding, aging Tigers team, he's going to get 200 wins fairly easily, and he's going to surmount it by, I think, a decent amount. He's at 183 career now. The Astros' offense is young, athletic, and dynamic. So if he just pitches league average the next 2 years of his contract, he's probably going to – he has a chance to win 30 games. If he stays healthy and he pitches league average – he could win 30 games, and wins still matter. Mm-hmm. For Brian Kenny does not have all the BBWAA ballots. So he's going to get 220-some wins. He's got a shot at 3,000 strikeouts, JJ, career. I mean, he needs a little bit more than 2 years, I think, to get to 3,000
yeah.
strikeouts.
Oh, yeah.
He's around 2373 now, so he probably needs 3 or 4 years. But he still does strike guys out. 9.2 per nine this year, 8.5 career. I think it is a Hall of Fame resume as long as he stays healthy the next couple of years. For me, I've always been surprised that Major League Baseball doesn't market Verlander more. He looks the part. He is fun to watch pitch because he gets the ball. He's not one of these slow. And I think to his credit, and I'm not trying to bang on Ken Revisa's methods, but I don't think this guy ever talked to Ken Revisa at Fullerton, who's always like, all right, get the ball, breathe, go through your process. I know that guy's good at his job as a sports psychologist, but I hate guys who work with Ken Revisa because they take 25 pitches seconds between every pitch. This guy gets the ball and goes. His delivery's high energy, and it doesn't hurt for me that he's dating and is engaged to Kate Upton. To me, I would love for this guy to be front and center in the postseason for the Astros, and I think it also the narrative of the Astros is so compelling now that they make this last-minute deal. They're playing for the city of Houston with this tragedy that's happened with the hurricane. It's got a lot of big-picture, casual baseball fan things going on to it that a lot of other players don't have.
And the thing about it is you look at this, and what would be the difference? Like, because this trade last night was 11:30 Eastern, it's happening. 11:40 Eastern, it's not happening. 12 Eastern, the deadline comes, and no word that it's happening. If the Astros had been shut out at the regular, the non-waiver deadline of Zach Britton,
yeah.
and then shut out knowing they came this close on Verlander, a team that had a really bad August, now admittedly, is getting guys healthy. Getting Carlos Correa back helps the team be better.
I yes. mean,
but
he's awesome.
Getting Lance McCullers back helps the team get better. But you do those guys getting back, and you get Verlander, which all of a sudden means you do have a legit top three, a Verlander, Keuchel, McCullers top of your rotation for the postseason. Very big. And the thing about it is also is that you look at this and you have to say the Astros gave up significant value. I mean, yes. this is it does amaze me the difference in what pitchers are worth.
It sounds like that's why they didn't want to do it. Like, it sounds like they had agreed to the parameters of this deal, according to one of the sources I talked to last night or texted with. And he said it was pretty much done. Then the Astros got cold feet about wanting to give up those guys. And at the last minute, they relented. And like you said, I think they were hesitant because the price for hitters has been so different than the price for pitchers. But the reality was the reality that they were looking at starting Brad Peacock or Mike Fiers or Charlie Morton in the playoffs, and they didn't want to do that.
But let's put it in perspective. Justin Verlander, better player than JD Martinez. But JD Martinez, Justin Verlander is going to be really important for you in two playoff games in a series. JD Martinez will play all of them.
Right.
And the difference between the haul that the Tigers got for Verlander, who has I know it's also more years, but you're also talking about Verlander's carrying a contract for yes. those years, it's not all wrapped in a bow there.
If he's not good, that will be an onerous contract
right.
because he's owed a lot of money.
So you look at that, and the haul that they got, if I gave you Jake Rogers or the haul they got for JD Martinez, which one would you rather have?
I'd take Rogers. He's got a chance to be a starting catcher.
You know, Kyle?
I kind of like Dawal Lugo as a guy who can be a good player. I got an interesting comparison on him the other day, Juan Uribe. So I think there's a valuable player there.
Does he like to soak his chewing tobacco in bourbon?
I think pre
if so, I'm all in.
Pre overly heavy, but I think moving.
Oh, I love overly heavy Juan Uribe. That's the best Juan Uribe.
You know, big postseason home run, Dodgers over the
two-time
Braves.
Two-time World Series champion in Juan Uribe. Yeah.
No, okay.
My point being, like, that is the second guy that they got in this deal, and you would say like. But my point being that they
third guy, I mean, like Daz Cameron.
I'd rather have Jake Rogers than Daz Cameron, but they're both. But they're not. They're,
I'm on Daz Cameron. That's a big second half.
It is. It's a very big second half.
So if you just take the Daz Cameron was the number one player at the top of the draft out of it, and just evaluate him as a 20-year-old high school outfielder, you have to be pretty encouraged with what he's done.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, both the him and the thing that I love about that trade for the Tigers is both Franklin Perez is the key, the big piece.
Yes.
And then both of the other guys that they got are going to provide enough defensive value that even if they don't hit that much, they're big leaguers and they're solid big leaguers.
They have a path to the big leagues. Because, I mean, there's guys – I mean, you do have to –
Daz Cameron will play in the big leagues. Daz Cameron will play in the big leagues. Now, how much impact he does, but he's a center fielder – I hate to say it, but also he's a key guy in a deal that you traded Justin Verlander. That plays a part in it.
No, but, it definitely does.
But you put it this way, like you put all that together, but him and Jake Rogers, when you talk about up middle guys who have defensive value, and then you throw on top of it that both of them have a shot to hit. Again, and that's the two, three guys you got in this deal. But the other thing,
those guys both have a shot. I think those guys both have a chance to be solid average regulars. I don't think either one of those guys is a star. I think Daz Cameron, again, people have a – I think he's just difficult for the average fan to evaluate because he was such a dude, son of a big leaguer. But he's not like Mike Cameron. He's not that level defender.
He's not.
But he's a good center fielder, though.
Like, I mean, again –
That's a weapon for him.
I'm expecting that it wouldn't be shock me at all to hear, you know, Bubba Starling big leaguer in the next couple – he's on the 40-man.
I did not list him in my 10 guys I want to see called
up. No, but my point being is if Bubba Starling makes the big leagues, Daz Cameron has a much easier path to the big leagues.
See, and that's the thing is I actually got this because we're talking Tigers. I think your point about the trade is an important one to make, that the value of power is just so easy to find right now. And it is valued. As much as it's valued, it's easy to find, so it's devalued in trades. It's amazing. It's extremely valued in the draft, but it's devalued in trades because it's like, we can find power anywhere.
Which has been proven this year.
Starting pitching is harder to find. So it comes at a premium in these trades.
I will say one thing that I think – another reason I really like this deal for the Astros is they traded guys. There's no question Franklin Perez is very talented. You know, Daz Cameron and Jake Rogers do some things where you can say, hey, you can see a path here. But they have guys still in their system that you can say, we're better than all those guys. Forrest Whitley has, in a lot of ways, put himself – above Forrest, Franklin Perez.
Forrest Whitley, I know they're midseason, but if you said it right now.
Kyle Tucker is better than Daz Cameron. Not to mention they have a whole bunch of other outfield depth. You know, catching-wise, I mean, again, I'm not, you know.
J.J. loves Garrett Stubbs.
Jake Rogers, Garrett Stubbs. I mean, you know.
So it's not a case where they, you know, Franklin Perez was the one true pitching option they had in their system. Daz Cameron's not the only potential athletic young outfielder. In a lot of ways, they had guys better. So that's where the depth of the system comes in.
I agree.
So right. I like this from the Astros' perspective. A, you've acquired a true front-of-the-rotation, ace-caliber pitcher with postseason experience. And at the same time, you've done it while keeping the best players in your system and traded from, you know, some players who might be good, but they're not the top guys in your system for the most part.
The thing that did strike me last night is I remember seeing Franklin Perez pitching at Buies Creek about a month and a half ago and talking to their guys afterwards and basically, like, just the feel he has and all that. And they're like, you know, yeah, I hope we still have him in a, you know, a little while. Because
there were a lot of scouts watching
and you knew that this was a possibility, but the thing about it is that I did want to pivot on that is that you also, the thing that stands out with this is when you have now a Tigers farm system that if you're putting together a updated top 10 is going to start with Perez, Fado, Manning, Bo Burrows, Kristen Stewart, You got Funkhauser. You've got Rogers. You've got Cameron.
I still think Lugo fits in that 9.
Well, Lugo. Absolutely. I'm saying you've got a lot. This is the best Tigers farm system
in a long time.
In a long time.
I mean, our midseason list had, you know, like Sandy Baez and Brian Garcia, the closer at the University of Miami, is in AAA this year.
Had a great year,
though. He's had a great year. Austin Sodder's on that list. Matt Hall wasn't on that list. But you don't have to have. I mean, Austin Sodder's had a nice year, but he's still like a back end rotation tops left-hander. Like, best case scenario, he's like, maybe I hope he turns into J-Hap.
You know, I think with
one out of 10 of those guys turns into J-Hap.
Overall, I mean, we talked about teams, you know, obviously the White Sox have gotten a lot of love for how they've gone about the rebuild. I think the Tigers obviously did it a little bit later than most people thought they should have, but they've done a nice job. As Bob Nightingale pointed out, they cleared $170 million off the books last night.
Right.
All of a sudden, that's a pretty solid top 10 with position players, with pitching.
It is.
I mean, now you can look at the Tigers and say, okay, they're not burdened by these huge contracts. And one of the issues with them is their depth was horrendous. Some of the guys they were throwing out there starting every day had no business getting anything other than a pinch hit at bat every fourth day in the big leagues. People love you, John. They want your attention. So I think now for the Tigers,
tell me that.
You know, overall, I think for the Tigers now, it gives them that opportunity to not just go with the stars and scrubs approach, build up something that's a little more well-rounded, and hopefully compete sooner rather than later.
One problem with that is they got rid of the tradable pieces, Justin Upton, Justin Verlander, J.D. Martinez. It is amazing, like, when you have basically the Tigers coming out and saying, this back problem Miguel Cabrera has, it may be something he deals with for the rest of his career. And then you look at his contract and you go,
There's only so much you can do.
To clear every onerous contract, but I think.
And when you say hard to clear every onerous contract, you are talking about he has $200 million plus.
Right, but that's not their. But their payroll has been close to $200 million every year for the last 3 or 4 years. It's not going to be that forward. So, I mean, there's so much you can do. You also have to expect, if you're the Tigers, you don't expect old Miguel Cabrera to walk through the door because he's got, for those last 5 years, and $152 million that are left. That's what's left.
You might have to hope for what kind of this late career Albert Pujols is.
No. You have to hope for more than that.
No, but I'm saying if there's a back problem that's crushing him.
$184 million left. Non-vesting.
I mean, talk about what Miguel Cabrera will look like at 38, 39.
That counts this year.
If you look at
next year.
You look
at 30, 30, 30, 30, 32.
30, 30, 30, 30, 32, 32.
Oh, two more years after that?
Yes.
Ooh, hoochie mama.
But that's what I'm saying. If Cabrera is what he is now versus, you know, fast forward 4 years.
But what he's done this year is not who you have to hope.
Right, you have to hope.
You have to do what you can do. And to me, I'm saying... Like the year of Big Poppy in 2012, the Bobby Valentine year, where he just said, like, forget this. I'm peace out, you guys. Yeah, I could probably play, but peace out. And that led to Big Poppy revival. This guy needs to shut it down today. I mean, that's not funny at all. No. He needs to shut it down today. Go to a back specialist and be like, okay, what do I have to do to be a cromulent baseball player? Because right now he's not. And that's where I'm concerned.
But that's
where Albert Pujols doesn't do. This guy's not as big as Pujols. Also, back is not good, but foot and knee, so there's no foundation for Pujols. That's not necessarily the case for Cabrera. So
I'm just saying I think it's something that is a reasonable concern to have, that if at 38 it's, well, there's still some power, but there's nothing.
Well, you know
else.
He's going to be bad. I mean, he's going to be
and
bad.
That's where you paid for.
Well, you knew when you gave him that contract, the end of this contract is going to be terrible. You just didn't think that the end of the terrible part would start in 2017. So you got to hope for JJ. I always love your phrase,
dead cat bounce.
But you don't need a dead cat bounce. You need a three-year dead cat bounce.
That's not a dead cat bounce. The dead cat only bounces once.
If he has three decent years, 18, 19, 20, I'm still talking about three dead years after that. So that's what I'm hoping for. And if you're the Tigers, that's what you're hoping for. You're hoping that
The
next 3 years, Miguel Cabrera can still be a decent player, because he's not right now.
And we haven't talked about Jordan Zimmermann, who has been awful and also has
That's the deal that if that had worked out, or say they'd said, you know what, forget it, The old man, the late Mr. Illich, is all in. We're going to pay Max Scherzer. Would they have been in the playoffs for the last couple of years? They didn't miss by much last year. They probably would have been. The difference between Max Scherzer and Jordan Zimmermann is a canyon. It's Canyonero sized.
Unexplained fires are a matter of course.
So that is the one. That's the one really misevaluation they made. They tried to save a little money, and that Jordan Zimmermann could approximate Max Scherzer, and he cannot. That's been a rough one. The other part of the Tigers to me, that's the American League Central, is interesting. The Indians are the best team in that division. They won the pennant last year. They're very good again this year. The Twins, who had this great farm system a couple years ago, rocky road to get back to contention, but they're a contender again this year. Whether it's Byron Buxton, whether it's J.O. Barrios, Jose Barrios,
Max Kepler,
Miguel Sano. Their young players are the big
guys.
That's
it.
The guys who, and they have an onerous contract. They have a very onerous contract. Joe Mauer's contract has been every bit as onerous as Miguel Cabrera's.
But it's almost done.
It's almost done. So it can be done, I guess is my point. You have to develop from within. Then you've got these other three teams.
I think the Tigers are in a better position to do that now.
The White Sox clearly hit the reset button, as you wrote about last offseason, and they've continued that this year, and I think we all are encouraged by the talent they've brought in. I am discouraged by just how brutal Birmingham and Winston-Salem are. Those two teams are combined like 65 games under 500.
The one that's hard to explain is Charlotte.
Charlotte's awful too. All those three teams have had some talent, but they don't know how to win. That's a culture issue, I think, with the
Redskins. Annapolis, Justin Dershowitz, who...
Go Justin, go.
Who makes me feel old when I talk to him because, like...
A lot of guys make me feel old. A lot of the scouts I talk to, or I'm looking them up online, I'm like, oh, I covered this guy. He was on the college beat,
they actually have won, and they've essentially turned the team over, like, almost entirely. It's like, hi, welcome to...
Gavin Sheets and Jake Berger.
And then you have traded guys, Andre Davis. You have they've turned that team over, but they've been a relatively successful team.
So it's a deeper organization, but I do wonder. I'm like the Astros now. The Yankees are doing that. I think there's a lot of evidence that winning in the minor leagues and trying to win with talent that's a good way to go. Just disregarding you're trying to create a culture of winning. I think that does help. The White Sox, that's one more step they need to take. But to the Tigers are clearly joining the White Sox in the full rebuild. The team in the middle is the Royals. They just haven't. They never started. They never pressed that reset button yet. And it's getting ready to get pressed for them this offseason.
Yes.
And their system is by far the worst in this division.
No, they are. It is going to be a lengthy climb back up. At the same time, when you say about from under contracts, they don't have those. They all are walking out the door and... The reality of it is that they should be the number of first round picks, supplemental picks that they should have next year. Second round, between compensation for guys that they should tender.
Yes.
Should be a pretty significant haul.
But onerous contracts for 600, Alex. Name the two very onerous contracts that the
Alex Gordon.
But there's one more.
Ian Kennedy. I love the honesty from Ian Kennedy. And when they asked him, it's like, you have an opt out at the end of the year. Basically, his answer was, I'm not an idiot.
Yeah. No, he's not. He went to SC Business School, and he's not an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where I think with the Royals, and again, I think they've been on a little bit of a different time frame than some of these other teams. They won the World Series. And again, I think you ask Royals fans, okay, guys, you're going to get to go to back-to-back World Series and win one.
But Tigers would make that. The Tigers not only would have made that trade,
yes.
They would have, they had this owner who was basically like, this is all I want before I pass. And unfortunately for them, never happened.
I mean, so again.
But they don't stop playing. They still have championship play.
There's no question. They have to keep going.
But what I am saying is, you know what? I said when they won the World Series.
You did.
This is going to get awful at some point. It's going to be awful. And when it does, do say, you know what? I'm going to check. I've saved it on the DVR, if you're a Royals fan. I'm going to enjoy this again.
Flags fly forever. Yes. You can always look up and say, man, how much fun was that? The way the Royals did it, especially.
They're going to be watching that for several years.
Yes.
And
they
you know what? That's a trade you make.
That's a trade-off you make.
Well, I'm just saying, I know it's harder to compete and to have a good farm system now. It is harder. they have struggled more than others have. There are other teams that have.
No, but I would argue if you talk about the teams that, like, I mean, again, I'm arguing from the standpoint, the Giants, the team that beat them,
they
the
won
first
three
one,
times.
No, no, but and basically they have hit the cliff while spending $150 million, and their farm
this
system
is true.
And their farm system
they hit the
is,
cliff about a month, about a year and a half ago, like right. in the middle of last season when they hit the cliff.
And their
we
farm
thought they were just a closer away. Whoops.
And their and their farm system is not one where you say
it's not good.
And the difference being, like, again, I'm not saying the Royals are in a, it's going to be ugly, but they do have, they could say, okay, Raul Mondesi, we sent you back down, we gave you some time, you're still younger than many of the top prospects in baseball.
Right.
We're going to send you out now, and you're hopefully our next star. That next star is not coming through the door
who,
for the Giants.
Who's his wingman? That's what I'm curious. Jake Junis?
Salvador Perez. He's like, I'm signed for long term. I'm affable. Everyone likes me. I'm sticking around.
I will say the AL Central, I think, has definitely gotten a lot more interesting. You look at where it was last year compared to this year, just in terms of where the various teams are, how much you have that mix of teams ready to contend and win now versus some really promising systems coming up. And you know, the AL West as well. I mean, we talked a little bit about it at the beginning. Look, the Astros just made a bombshell move. And by the way, this isn't like the Yu Darvish deal where the Dodgers have him for another month and then he's likely, possibly gone. Even if the Astros slip up this year, they're all back next year. This is not a team that's on this.
It's not a small window.
This has to be it. If we don't get it now, we're in trouble. I mean, they have an opportunity to be competitive moving forward. You know, the Angels made some moves yesterday to fortify the two weakest spots. I mean, they had 7 home runs from their left fielders the entire season. Lowest in the
Justin
big leagues.
Upton has more home runs than the Angels left fielders have had either the last 2 or 3 seasons.
Well, considering it's been a Daniel Nava, Craig Gentry, Ben Revere, Cameron Maybin, Nick Franklin at one point. You know,
I'm warning you.
Mess.
It's careful. Good. Nothing ever don't negative about Daniel
exactly.
Nava will ever be.
No, no, I'm just saying that for his time at the Angels, the production wasn't there. I think it's something where they've, you know, and maybe he opts out, but again, in the course of, hey, make
they
a
have
playoff,
a window.
They
have
do.
A window.
And then Brandon Phillips expires after this year.
Oh, but the Brandon Phillips, that was a key. The thing that the Angels do not have and have not had for multiple years, they are a team of, when you talk about stars and scrubs, they're a team of stars and then depth that is balsa wood thin. I mean, it is something where you put any weight on it, and we've seen it the year that they
yes.
won 98. Was it 98, 97?
Yes, 98 games.
98, and by the end of the year, it's like, well, we've got a 3-man rotation, and then Johnny Holstaff. Like, that's something that they had to do. And you look at it now, their bench of the guys that they had before they started making these moves, they really didn't have a guy on the bench that you said, man, this guy really helped you win. Compare them to, like, a team like the Astros, where they really can mix and match somewhat. And that's what I love what they did, is like, Brandon Phillips, he's not great at this point, but he's okay, and he really helps them.
You know, and again, you look, the Angels' second baseman had the lowest OPS in baseball for that
right.
position. In reality, that's been a black hole since Howie Kendrick was traded.
They shored up 2 massive holes.
So,
but the price for starting pitching is so high. So their starting pitching, we've talked about it all year. The cavalry for them is Andrew Heaney coming back from Tommy John and Garrett Richards coming back from, I forget what his injury was.
And Tyler Skaggs just came back. So you need those guys to be healthy. But I think what's interesting about
best case scenario, those are your playoff starters, are they not?
Yes.
I mean, Parker Bridwell's like,
But like what they were hoping the start of the year was, these guys hold the fort and we can still contend till September, and Richards, Skaggs, and Heaney come back, and those are our guys. And Heaney's last start was very
much
encouraging.
Better.
And Richards is close to coming back.
Yep. I think it's interesting with them. You know, the Angels, I think there's an interesting dynamic here about if you can just hold on till August, you can get really good potential impact players at very, very low cost.
That's the part that has blown me away.
Yes.
And is like, how many of these trades have happened? I know that you're paying salaries too, but in how many of these trades for bats has the guy who the team that's contending acquired is going to produce more from August or September
yep.
till the end of the season than
the
team
first 5 months.
Then the team that traded him away is going to get out total out of these deals. Because when you look at Boob pal for Yonder Alonso. When you look at
Lucas Duda already for the Rays.
Yeah, you look at what Lucas Duda's done for the Rays, and you look at it's like, okay, you know, you look at Jay Bruce for Ryder Ryan.
Ryder Ryan is the defense. All the Mets trades, where all the Mets fans I know are like, hey, we got another middle reliever. I mean, that's every trade the Mets have made this year. Had just been startling in how low the return has been.
But the thing about it is, and I don't think it's just, you know, the market.
They do skew it, though. They skew it. They didn't even get a Dawel Lugo. They never held out for a Dawel Lugo. I mean, Jay Bruce, J.D. Martinez, those guys are very comparable.
I would rather have
him, too, but they're comparable corner power bats, all the values in the bat. For some teams, if you're the Indians, I'd rather have Bruce because you need a lefty power bat. They really don't have it. Mm-hmm. It's a very right-handed lineup.
Martinez has been great for the Diamondbacks.
He's been great. Bruce has been good. I'd rather have Martinez. But the point is, they got a lot more for J.D. Martinez in Detroit. And the Mets didn't even try. On any of their deals, it seems like the Mets was like, yeah, just take the guy. I mean, I don't know how much ownership has to do with that. The Mets, everything must go. But they had a nobody beats the Wiz kind of attitude to this. They were not going to be undersold, and they were not.
I will say, overall, generally, Mets skew or not, we have seen a lot of guys who are potential impact bats.
Yonder Alonso, Boob Powell is a similar level.
Well, that is also, sorry, but both the A's and the Mariners in recent years have made some trades that make you scratch your head. Those are three organizations that are pretty consistent that way when it comes to trades. The Mets, the Mariners, and the A's, where they're kind of like make you go, that seems a little out of the norm. I think that's fair. All three of those organizations.
Oh, I will say, though, I think it's across the board. What are the trades for especially an expiring contract hitter?
Well,
what's the haul that is significant?
I don't have them all in front of me, but you just mentioned J.D. Martinez. Just Dawel Lugo is better than all these guys we're talking about. It's not really that close. He's a top 10 prospect. The other guys are not. I mean, that's just that right there is just it might be the needle in the haystack. I agree with your point in general. I still think the Mets really undersold.
The other one we have to throw in there, which I cannot believe, because
Tim
Beckham for Tobias Myers.
Beckham, that's insane.
I will say that I do feel like the Tigers, Justin Upton. Keep in mind, Justin Upton. It's funny, he signed that big contract his first year in Detroit, really his first half in Detroit. He actually had a decent second half. First half didn't go well, and I think people wrote it off as, it's just another, he's done, he's on the wrong side of 30. But he's been fantastic this year. It's a 904 OPS, sixth best in the American League. He's in the top 10 in doubles. He's been pushing it in home runs. He's had a really good year. He's still an impact middle of the order bat. And I will say that I feel like Grayson Long is greater than Reed Ryan. He's greater than Ryder Ryan. Sorry, greater than
Reed Ryan. Makes was sense. It?
Drew Smith.
Drew
Smith. For Lucas. I mean,
although he's better than all those guys.
Right, Grayson Long. You know, so again,
he has a chance to start.
Again, the Tigers did okay here in the sense that they getting that Dawel Lugo. And look, Sergio Alcantara. You know, you get some Ahiri Adrianza comps. That's a big league utility man. I mean, that can help you defensively. Grayson Long.
The haul for J.D. Martinez was not good. It's way better than the rest of these. And it's actually like, it's not an abnormal haul. To me, the other ones, the Yonder Alonso for Boob Powell, that's abnormal. What the Mets did, all these guys who could be regulars on playoff teams traded for zero value. Those are abnormal. I don't think that's the normal. That's the abnormal.
It's very, very true. I think, Grayson Long leads the Southern League in ERA. He's got one of those sneaky fastballs.
He was probably their top pitching prospect, was he not? Him and Jaime Barria.
Barria and Chris Rodriguez was ahead as well.
On upside, Grayson Long's in Double A. Chris Rodriguez is still in rookie ball. Yes. I mean, I know Chris Rodriguez is a really nice arm.
No
just talked to Bill Mitchell about another day.
I mean,
let's see him pitch 70 innings in a year.
Right. I would take Barria, though, over Long.
Yes. I would, too. But those are the top two guys. And Barria is, really small. Like 6 foot.
He's a 6 foot right-hander, but there are those guys out there. Regardless, I mean, the Tigers did nice for themselves. I think, you look at these trades yesterday, and for the most part, the Astros did well for themselves. The Tigers did well for themselves. I look at the Angels trades. The Angels did well for themselves with Justin Upton. The Tigers did reasonably well as well, getting Grayson Long in return.
Let's handicap this American League wild card because it does involve
a couple
of these
everybody.
Teams.
Everybody.
No, we're narrowing things down. I'm not.
Hey, the Rangers
Royals
acquired
in this.
Miguel. That I like the Rangers deal last night. Tyquan Forbes for Miguel.
Miguel Gonzalez is a guy that pretty sneakily go look at him the last 5 years. it's pretty solid.
Yeah, he's definitely had his moments.
He is the definition of a back of the rotation starter, but he is a back of the rotation starter who's like,
how has he not been a Mariner?
But here's the thing, though.
How did Jerry DePoto never go get this guy?
But here's the thing about Gael Gonzalez, though. We say, back rotation starter. And I think when people think back rotation starter, I think, 4-4 ERA type. He's a 3.8 ERA pitching all his games in Baltimore and Chicago. I think he's even better than a lot of what people think he is. This is a guy who,
I think
people think of him as a pure number five. I think, a 3.8 ERA, at the end of the day, you are what your production is.
He's posted his ERAs year by year, 15, 4.91, 16, 3.73, 17, 4.31. I know he's had a couple of those.
He's also had some bad years.
If he posted a 4 ERA for the Rangers.
For Tyquan Forbes, that's a great deal.
Yeah.
For Tyquan, we're all in good agreement on that.
In
a playoff series, you do not want Gonzalez making two starts. You want him making one. Mm-hmm. He's a fourth starter. That's how you line it up. He's a fourth starter on a playoff team. A 106 ERA.
Unfortunately for
plus,
the Rangers,
he might be there too right now. But you know what? If he's better than what you had,
let's
then
be honest.
That's good.
Let's be honest. This is a team that was going out of it in July, and traded away a guy that you want. If you're playing a one-game wild card, you're like, okay, Darvish is the guy you want on the mound.
So your wild card standings in the American League, the Yankees are currently one game up on the Twins, but those are the top two teams in these wild card standings. Bartolo Colon-led Twins.
By the way, I love the fact that Bartolo Colon has been good enough that if he wants to come back next year, he'd have an option.
Yeah, I think so.
Keep coming back, Bartolo.
But the Angels and the Orioles are the next two teams that are both within three games. Then it's a jumble where you've got Tampa, Texas, Seattle, Kansas City all within four or four and a half. So to me, it's those top four teams that are the most likely, New York, mm-hmm. Minnesota, the Angels, the Orioles. Which of those teams do you not like? Who do you like to make that, JJ? Out of those, we're not looking at schedules, unfortunately. We don't have that in front of us. But Yankees, Twins, Angels, Orioles. Do you think the Angels and Orioles can catch either of those other teams?
Oh, they absolutely can.
Yeah, do you think they will?
I do think the Twins are the team that fades out of that group. And I hope not. I want them. They're a fun team to watch. Byron Buxton, thankfully, with an injured but not broken Hammett. Byron Buxton is probably the most fun guy of any of these teams, including, the Angels and Mike Trout. Just pure fun to watch. But right now. But I do think the Twins, I kind of see. Well,
no Miguel Sano. He's out with this shin injury. You have Buxton with his hand injury, but he didn't break a Hammett, so he'll come back at some point. And I love the great news they had the other day was Hector Santiago was trying to rehab and come back, and I saw Mike Berardino tweet, sat 83, touched 86, going to need more time. So, yes.
Well, let me ask it this way for you guys in a second. I'm changing up the question, which is, how many wins do you think gets the second wild card in the AL?
85, maybe 84.
That's my answer. I was going to say 84. 84 and 78 would be a playoff team.
And the thing about this is, I don't think that is a disaster for baseball.
Absolutely.
And I know there are people like, oh, look, this is saying wildcard. Right now, we are sitting here. We had a fascinating waiver trade deadline, in part because you only have about 6 or 8 teams that are not in it as we start the last full month of the season.
So if the Twins fade, I agree with you. I think they're the most likely team to fade. Which do you think is?
Am in agreement with you. The Twins liking the fade. The team that, they get bashed because ownership does things in certain ways that are not kosher. But at the end of the day, the Orioles have won the most games in the American League, 2012, 2016. They have hung on despite Manny Machado disappearing for half a year.
Yeah.
Kevin Gausman and Chris Tillman completely falling apart.
That's not true. And Tillman's still falling apart, but Gausman Gausman.
That's where I'm getting.
He's become second half Marcus Page.
That's what I was about to get at. Is that now you're starting to see Machado's doing his thing. We've seen Gausman turn it around. Yeah. That's still a really good bullpen.
Tillman's still dead, Jim.
Jonathan Scope has had a ridiculous year. Trey Mancini, if not for Aaron Judge, that might be your American League Rookie of the Year.
He's had such
a good year, and no one's talking about it.
Scope might be the MVP. I don't mean to sound like Harold Reynolds here. I will do my impression otherwise. Look at his season.
It's been good. It's been very good.
I know it's been like top five WAR in American League.
No, I know, but I'm saying, but like when you say he's MVP, I'm taking Altuve before him. I'm taking Trout before him.
I agree, but I think
if they win the wild card and this guy hits 40 home runs, he's got 30 already, and he has high defensive value. He has had a fantastic year. He's their best player.
You now add Tim Beckham. I mean, to me, you look at all
those
teams.
Which is just shocking. That should have been subtraction by addition. But it wasn't. It was unbelievable.
Hey, sometimes a fresh start's all a guy needs. For me, you look at the teams you just named.
Never saw this coming, ever.
That's fair.
If anyone in Baltimore saw this coming, ever, like even the Duke, I mean, come on, man.
What I would say is, of all those teams you named, given the Yankees' current struggles, that to me is the most fearsome lineup out of those four teams.
I think they are the best lineup.
You combine that with... You know, Dylan Bundy, everyone said, oh, the regression's going to come, It hasn't come.
I know he threw a complete game shutout. I bet that's when it comes.
after that one hitter.
I've reached my 3,000 slider limit. It's time for a change.
You know, we've seen Gausman come back. I mean, and again, you just mix in the fact these guys have been there before. You have a manager who, you know, does very well. Last year's playoff, you know, wild card game aside, Buck Showalter does manage a bullpen well. You've got good arms all the way through, you know, and so your starters don't have to go 6, 7, 8.
They could have used Miguel Gonzalez to walk right back through that door.
There's only so many times you can keep throwing Ubaldo Jimenez out there and it without it just really coming back to bite you. But I look at all those teams, and truthfully, even though they're not in the spot right now, I do think the Orioles are the best overall team now that certain things have started to recalibrate the way we thought they might with the talent on that roster.
Second worst ERA in the American League. It is stunning that they're a 500 team.
And that's a testament to their offense. That's a testament to their bullpen. I mean, I think this is a team that, you know, has played so bad for so long, and the fact they're in it now and really now starting to hit their stride.
But they fall right into your wheelhouse, JJ, of... They overpaid for power. Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo, and it restricts them otherwise. So the overpaying for those power guys, when they've found power elsewhere, like Trey Mancini,
partly that also is that nowadays, if everyone in baseball hits 20 home runs, and you've got a guy whose power is his only calling card, and he hits 35.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, it is.
And then when he doesn't hit 35, you're really in trouble.
But again, like it is like I have trouble calibrating the value of position players right now, partly because in a world where Freddie Galvis can hit 20 home runs last year, and when Tim Beckham's going to hit 20 this year, and I don't know like what that line. Thinking of 25 home runs is basically like, yeah, he's got modest pop is something again. I've had to do this before,
but that's not the case. 25 is not modest. We're not there yet.
But right now, we have more than half of all MLB qualifiers have already hit 20.
Right. That is
And there's
insane.
A month to go.
3 years ago, we had 2,000 fewer home runs. I know what the trend is the last 3 years, but 2014, we thought we were on the back on this trough. The game just changes so fast right now.
It's crazy.
That's why I'm not there with you yet. So this year, that is insane. Will this trend continue to go up and up? I just don't know. I don't know how you could say... Yeah, it will keep going up or it will go back to
the
I don't know.
I'm just saying, but right now, when the year's over, we're going to say that the average regular who got 500 at-bats is going to be a 20-plus home run guy.
Right, and I think I also think that doing that is much harder to do today than it has been in a post-PED age. I think it's just harder and harder to do that. And who plays every day?
But I'm not saying playing every day. I'm saying a guy who's going to qualify. Who's
right.
Got 150
games. Yeah. I would be curious to see the number of players who do that today compared to, and what that trend has been. I am curious. When you mentioned the Yankees, that team is a little wobbly, and I know people call them the baby bombers. They still have several 33, 34 year old regulars. Some of their more important players are
Frazier,
older guys.
Headley.
I'm thinking like Gardner and there's $33 million backup, a fourth outfielder, Jacoby Ellsbury, whose contract also falls into this onerous category we talked about before. The guy who's kind of saving them right now is the guy whose contract was onerous the last few years. CeCe Sabathia has been pitching so well for them, and he's just so consistent for them. It's like he's...
Except when he's asked to cover bunts last night.
That is not his forte. Yes, that is not his forte.
Which goes back to, by the way, pitchers sometimes can look horrible and go back to being really good really quickly. Everyone thought CeCe's about there. Oh, he's done. Justin Verlander. Oh, he's done. Bartolo Colon looked done in 2006.
Done in 2017. Yeah, half of this year.
I mean, you know, I think it's one of those things with pitchers. It's especially the ones who have been good for a very long time saying, oh, he's completely got absolutely nothing left to offer anymore, is never that wise. There's always, and now I'm not saying you should go pay that guy what the Yankees, you know, are paying Sabathia.
That's how Ricky Nolasco got the contract he got.
Right. Now there's a line. The difference between Ricky Nolasco at his peak versus Verlander and Sabathia at their peaks, clearly very, very different.
Think he's got a strikeout title on his... it's not a strikeout championship. He came close. I mean, I know that's why he got that contract. But the Yankees are a fascinating team. Like right now, Luis Severino, CeCe Sabathia, and you never know what Tanaka you're going to get. It's like he's either dynamic or he gets hit pretty hard.
They got to figure out the bullpen. I mean, considering Chapman, his struggles, Dellin Betances last night there for all to see.
Those two guys just are not as automatic as they have been. And then Chad Green all of a sudden is Mr. Automatic.
So put this in perspective. Would you rather the Orioles bullpen with Brad Brack?
I'd take the Yankees bullpen still.
Yes,
Zach Britton is clearly also not peak Zach Britton.
And that's where the interesting debate comes in. Also, the stuff the Yankees bullpen has, no question about it. But I'm going to be curious to see at the end of this year, because at the end of the day, it's about who gets the job done.
Right. The Yankees have the third best DRA in the American League, and the Orioles have the 14th. I mean, and this is with their bullpen guys. I would take the Yankees bullpen every time.
And I agree, but I'm interested to see here over this final month because we've seen Chapman and Betances start to slip a little bit.
Right, but that's reflected in these. As bad as they've been, A, they both still throw a hundo. They still have other options. They have Tommy Canley. Chad Green. That's what I'm saying.
Unbelievable this year.
So the thing is, like, the Orioles do not have those other options. They have, if you don't throw sidearm submarine from the right side, that's it. They have Brack, O'Day, and Givens to go with Britton. Those are their guys. And those have been their guys every day for the last 5 years, basically, in that, especially O'Day. Every day, Darren O'Day.
I know he still throws hard, but... The thing that does surprise me is with Aroldis Chapman that there's not more talk of he left it. We may have seen he helped a team win a World Series,
and he almost blew it for them too.
But
yes.
But when he almost blew it is when it was like
Joe Madden.
I've got nothing. Again, if you go back to my Twitter feed at the time, it's like
with you, man.
He threw the softest he threw all
ever.
Season. Ever. You're right. Ever. If you went back basically...
The softest he threw as a major league pitcher.
As a major league pitcher was in Game 7 of the World Series because he was completely and utterly toast, gassed, wiped out.
And overused.
And had nothing left. And all he could do was throw slider after slider. And so you're telling me, we talk about high stress innings. We talk about, okay, well, I can't think of a higher stress situation than being in your second inning in a game 7 of the World Series, the highest stress situation ever. You are beyond exhausted, and you're having to throw your breaking ball, not your fastball.
Yeah.
If you tell me, after you were
needlessly used in game 6.
If you tell me that Aroldis Chapman, like, that this is the recovery year, I completely get it.
Absolutely.
By the way, I know Andrew Miller has had injury problems before. But if you tell me why Andrew Miller is, you know, a little...
Bullpitting, JJ. Use the middle reliever 3 innings every other day.
But,
you could do that, right?
But hey, no, I'll say, if you're the Cubs, if you're the Cubs, absolutely use Aroldis Chapman. You got your ring and then said, hey, good luck with your future endeavors.
Correct.
It's a cruel world that way. But my point is that I'm not surprised in any way that Aroldis Chapman's not... Aroldis Chapman 2015 right now.
No, you're exactly right. I think it's exactly right. Hey, you know, Zach Britton pitched a lot last year too. So it is hard.
But in the postseason.
He didn't pitch enough.
In the postseason.
He pitched a lot.
He did not pitch enough.
Correct. Now, this is universally agreeable.
I want to go back to the original.
So it wouldn't shock me if both the Angels and the Orioles passed the Twins and the Yankees. But I do expect, if I'm picking one, two of these wild cards, I still think the Yankees have enough to hold on, and I think the Angels, I think those upgrades really helped them. Their September team is very different from their April, May, June team. So the other caveat for the Yankees is how dependent are they on Aaron Judge coming back? That's going to be very interesting, coming back to any semblance of his first half form, because right now he is a bad offensive player.
You know, Jerry Diamond at the Wall Street Journal had a nice graphic out there today just putting it in perspective. I think we all agreed, and those of us who, you know, we understood that Aaron Judge, for all his talents, was not going to hit, was not going to post 1,100-plus OPS over the course of the entire season. There was going to be a bit of a come down from that.
He still leads the league in home runs. Still leads the league in walks. You know, those are impressive titles.
You know, again,
he's also in strikeouts.
He's a really good player. Really good players, especially rookies, go through slumps. He'll figure it out. He's not. Is he? He's not Barry Bonds.
You're confident he'll figure it out.
Over the course of his career, yes. Will he flip the light switch on here automatically on September 10th? I can't say that with any significant confidence. But look, he's a good player.
I think it's been their offense is a little bit more hit and miss right now.
Right.
They're having these games where they still put up 12.
Gary Sanchez
has kind of said, I was this guy last year at the end of the year.
Just please
my turn to do it again.
Are you really gonna get to throw the ball to me again? I gotta catch it again?
Greg Bird's back, hit a home run yesterday.
Here's their run scored by month. 128, 140, 177, which was Aaron Judge insane.
Yes.
112. I know there's an All-Star break in there, but 132. They didn't score. Like, it's not like their offense completely deserted them.
Sure.
I do think that the bullpen has been a bigger problem than the offense for me.
I think you're right. I do think though that when Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge, first half Aaron Judge, that's a totally different team. Just from a confidence level. I mean, like, the fan involvement level, I did enjoy seeing Sonia Santamayor in the judges' chambers last night. That is a passionate fan. But, I mean, did she wear her normal robe?
I was going to say,
did she wear her best robe? That's what I want to know. Like, was that her usual robe? Was that the robe that she swims in, like, in that Onion cartoon about the Supreme Court? I was wondering which robe it was. Was that the official robe?
So you've picked the Yankees and the Angels.
I picked the Ziggy on the Angels.
Where are you going?
I'm going to say Yankees.
Dramatic pause.
I'm trying to think. I'm really trying to think who I'm going to give as the second. Orioles.
Gut feel for the Orioles, huh?
They always do it. We always, when it's all said and done.
They're pretty insane that way.
That is insane. When you look back at it, it's like, how'd they get in? And then they won't use Britton in the wild card game.
Or they'll start Ubaldo in the champion game, the one-game playoff.
So, you know, that I'm in the same boat. I'm go Yankees-Orioles. Again, I think the Orioles, for a lot of reasons, some of them stemming from some of the craziness that happens at the ownership level, are a punching bag. And unfortunately, it takes away from... This has been a really good franchise in terms of winning games on the field, putting together an exciting product on the field.
I think that you're overstating like the punching bag view of the Orioles because they've been in the playoffs a lot lately. I do think baseball fans acknowledge writers expect them to stumble every year, but it's not because of Peter Angelos. It's because their pitching staff usually is held together with bailing wire, and it is this year, and it usually, you know, the thing is it hasn't cost them. Until this year, I do think... If they don't make the playoffs, it will be because of that approach.
And there's no question.
Wade Miley and Ubaldo Jimenez.
Oh, look, they need to stop rotation. Running. They need to stop running Ubaldo Jimenez out there. There's no two ways about it. I do think the Orioles have...
Going back to our onerous contract phase.
It's really an embarrassment that they keep putting him out on a mound. But at the end of the day, I just see this as a team that they can crush you. I mean, you talk about, you know, power and what you can acquire and not acquire and how much it costs. At the end of the day, you've got six... almost seven guys now in that lineup who can just, I mean, 20, 30 home runs.
How about Wellington Castillo and Caleb Joseph with their combined like 28 home runs behind the plate? See you later. Matt Wieters leaving was like supposed to be this, not calamity, but a problem. They've rolled right along. That has been, again, you want the margins of your roster, especially in the lineup, taken care of. The Duke is your man. He's very good at that. Seth Smith is a nice platoon guy in right field. Looking forward to Austin Hayes maybe coming up there and being the right-handed part of that platoon instead of former Angels legend Craig Gentry.
I mean, being this year's Trey Mancini. Remember, Mancini came up last year.
It was like five games.
The very end.
Yeah.
Hit a couple bombs off lefties. I said, we're going to put you on our postseason wildcard roster. I mean, it's a situation where I think, you know, the Orioles, this is a good baseball team that is hitting its stride at the right time. There's no question. The pitching staff is not great. But again, I look at the other contenders as well. I still see more talent on this Orioles team than I do on the Twins. Overall, top to bottom. Yeah. Than I do...
I don't know about... more veteran talent, I would say that. I thought the Twins are extremely talented.
There's a lot of exciting young talent. But again, I think you look 1 through 9 at that lineup, you give the edge to the Orioles.
I'm beating a dead horse here because the Giants are just really bad. But
they're really bad. And they are
six Orioles hitters have more home runs than the leader on the Giants in home
runs. The Giants are really bad. The Giants... unfortunately for them, have not had that moment of reckoning like the Tigers did this year, where the Tigers were able to shed some contracts. And if we had a National League rebuild show, we would, because we focus a lot on the American League in this podcast.
Because that's where the moves. I mean,
the Dodgers have lost 5 straight, and they're still 50 games over 500.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
So you know, it's at a certain point, it's like, yep, we know how that one's shaping out.
I'm still not picking them in the National League. No, I still like the Nats.
Basically, we have essentially, but we're talking about this in the AL. Like, here's our National League playoff analysis. Dodgers in, Nationals in, Diamondbacks in. I'm sorry, I don't see them, especially coming off of their surprising thrashing of the Dodgers.
Rockies not necessarily
right.
in.
That's two and a half up on Rockies, the... Brewers are your only, and I can't imagine the Cubs not making it.
To me, that's actually. The Rockies and the slide that they've – I mean, this has been going on now. Going into the break, they really, really stumbled. Looked like, okay, maybe we're coming out of it, had a good run. But they have not been able to get on a sustained run of consistent victories. They always seem to stumble a little bit.
I'm going to go back to our onerous contracts discussion. But Carlos Gonzalez, I know that he's not the only – Ian Desmond is going to be in an onerous contract. But Carlos Gonzalez
And Alex Gordon could form a support group. Right
they really could. And for Gonzalez, the bigger problem is, like, he's a free agent after this year. It's like bad timing award.
What you have to call, they're different players, but he needs to call Carlos Gomez. And it's like, how did you deal with this?
I was going to say, he needs to call Andre Dawson and say, like, who could I give a blank check to so I can go play? And what stadium would you recommend me go to play in? I mean, because it's...
Normally it's a Coors Field, except it hasn't worked out.
I mean, he has had a brutal year. So, I'm with you guys. I actually think the Rockies are going to super fade. I would not be shocked that the Brewers pass them. I mean, I don't know.
Zach Davies, 16-game winner.
He's probably the second best homegrown pitcher that the Orioles have produced, other than Dylan Bundy. Is Zach Davies. They gave him away for what? I think it was...
It's the Gerardo Parra trade.
Gerardo Parra, who was not good
for them. So you're not counting Arrieta as...
I mean, for them. Well, in this administration. Jake Arrieta was drafted in 2006. Right. So that's a long time
ago. Just clarifying, though. Someone they're listening
to. That's a long time ago. Jake Arrieta was more than a decade ago. So in the recent past, by these guys. I mean, they gave him away for nothing. And he's really solid pitcher. I didn't understand... at the time, the need for Gerardo Parra to give up. They don't have much homegrown pitching. It's like, he's a little bit better than Mike Wright. You know, he's a little bit better than the other guys who have attempted.
Tyler Wilson.
He's a little bit better than Kevin Gausman has been. He shouldn't be, but he's been better.
Zach Davis has been, I mean, you mentioned Mike Gray has been a million times better than Mike Wright. I mean, I think Zach Davis has been a quality pitcher.
Yeah, it's stunning how good he's been. I mean, I was kind of almost hoping for Brent Suter to be the left-handed Zach Davis. That hasn't quite happened for the Brewers.
I still say
the lefty throwing 85, 87 hasn't quite worked out for them yet. But he got to the big leagues. I love it. Moeller High represents.
The Brewers are that team that you kind of expect to fail a little bit. They're still right there. I mean, all these guys they brought in, you know, you talked about Jesus Aguilar and Manny Pena and all these little, you know,
they're the anti-Giants.
All these little moves they made that you looked at them and said, who are these guys?
How many guys do they have, JJ, who have more home runs than the top guy on the Giants? Because they have nine players with double-digit home runs this year, which is a franchise record.
Last I checked, the Giants, I think, peak out at
15 or 14.
18. I thought it was 18 from...
So do you pick the Brewers Brandon to overtake Bell. The Rockies? Yeah, since we're on this,
yes,
getting
I am.
In the wild card.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
What was your question?
Brewers over Rockies or no?
To get the wild card.
Yes. Brewers over Rockies when it's all said and done, which makes the Brewers what the Brewers have done. I mean, that is one thing. When you want to talk about to wrap this in a bow and look at, I mean, when you do talk about now the... There was a lot of criticism of the Indians, basically how the Indians front office is spreading through baseball.
Yeah.
And credit to the, you know, hey, the Twins are doing quite well with a young, very analytically inclined former Indian. And then you look
at the... I would really just say, like, I love Derek Falvey and Thad Levine and those guys, but It's the guys who were there before getting better. It's the homegrown guys.
True. There's some truth.
Getting better. But all the other those guys predated Derek Cone.
And then we look at the Astros, like now their little basically shoots off because you look at the Brewers.
Yeah, David Stearns. Yep.
David Stearns has done, and the Brewers front office has done an excellent job of rebuilding in a very difficult division and really being, I think we would all agree, ahead. I mean, I know we put the Brewers on the cover from our minor league preview, but ahead of schedule.
Oh, no question. Absolutely no question.
This has all happened a lot faster.
And their farm system still seems like it's one where it's like, it's hard to pick out who the number one guy is. There's a lot of interesting guys, but it's hard to pick out like number one obvious guy.
Well, and they've done
it
with, you know, Brinson's battle. It's not like Brinson came up and gave him that shot in the arm like a Brad Zimmer has in Cleveland. Brinson, you know, had some, struggled a little bit, went back down, got hurt. Brett Phillips hasn't come up and, you know, been a superstar. They've really done it with their top prospects still being prospects. It's, again, sometimes you get that midseason call-up that really energizes you. They've done it with a lot of...
That Zimmer energy started slow, though, a little bit. That Zimmer energy, it shot, and then it was like,
And Hader's done as a very good lefty specialist. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's not like he's come into the rotation and every fifth day...
He does pump some serious gas, though, out of the bullpen. Oh, yeah. He's pitched some back-to-back days lately, which he's been pretty good. And Suter actually has been all right, so...
Yeah, no,
If you had Brent Suter making 9 starts and Josh Hader making none this year for the Brewers, and they're contending that way, that would be quite the parlay,
I'm gonna go contrarian and call this. Ready?
You're calling the Rockies.
One game playoff for the second wild card spot. Brewers Rockies. New Rocky Jonathan Lucroy hits the game winner to sink his old team, the Brewers.
That would be Rockies unfortunate for the Milwaukee Brewers. That would be harsh. How many times have the Brewers made it in the playoffs in their history? 3.
Well, 82,
2010, and 11. Is that it?
82, they made it, and then
2008. I forgot.
But the Sabathia. And then the 2011, they lost to the Cardinals in that.
It's not too often. That's the point. That Milwaukee, sentimentally for me, I have no allegiance to Wisconsin or Milwaukee, but they've had so few playoff. I mean, the winningest manager in franchise history is Phil Garner with a losing record. I mean, that is.
It's pretty amazing.
I mean, what's the defining image of Milwaukee baseball? Is it Bud Selig's shrug at the All-Star game there in 2001? I mean, like, what else defines it? So, yeah, I guess 1981 they made the playoffs, too.
I was going to say, it's the defining image. I'm probably still thinking Hank Aaron and Eddie Matthews.
That's Milwaukee Braves baseball.
I'm saying Milwaukee baseball. That's where I'm still going.
You should go there.
I think for...
Franchise, I'm right, but it's Milwaukee baseball. You're right for sure, 1987.
I would say that for, you know, I know for the older folks, was it Harvey's Wallbangers?
Yes, like, that's the 82. That's 81, 82.
You know, that team that made the World Series.
Thomas can play center field. Yes, he can.
Exactly. I mean, I think for those of us in my age bracket, it's, you know, that Prince Fielder, Ryan Braun just going back to back, you know, in those late 2000s. I mean, those
CC Sabathia saying, "Hop on, my back is large, I can carry much." I mean,
yes, I will pitch on 3 days rest again. Yes, I will do it again. I love 2008 CC Sabathia, Baseball America's Major League Player of the Year that year. Mm-hmm. So the Harvey's Wallbangers had 216 home runs that year, which led the American League. This year's team already has 192 with a month to play, and they ranked third in the National League. So times have changed, but that was a rollicking podcast. That was fun. I don't even think I yelled at anybody, which is good. I got animated.
I just yell.
But so we appreciate everybody listening. Kyle and JJ, great job. Thank you to our followers for tuning in today. I want to remind you all of our podcasts are brought to you by Baseballism, and can't thank them enough for their sponsors they've had all year. And the way that you can thank them is by shopping now at baseballism.com. Enter the offer code BASHIP. That's BASHIP. And receive free shipping on your order. Visit baseballism.com for hats, shirts, and much more today, and support the Baseball America podcast. So for JJ and Kyle, I'm John. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Visit baseballamerica.com for more podcasts.